Argument is McLeod versus Depesch. Mr. Mullins.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Brian Mullins, and I represent Kevin McLeod, who is the petitioner and appellant in this matter. This case is on habeas review for Mr. McLeod's convictions in a Wisconsin state court for robbery and operating a vehicle without the owner's consent. And those were consecutive sentences that he received on those convictions. The Supreme Court cases of Blockberger versus the United States.
Counsel, I don't understand how we get any of the issues that are covered in your brief, and that for two reasons. One, I gather your client pleaded guilty.
That's correct.
So he was not put in jeopardy twice. He wasn't even put in jeopardy once. And the Supreme Court has held that a guilty plea waives all possible double jeopardy objections.
Well, I think his guilty plea did not waive his objection to consecutive sentences. What he was doing
did
by
he
the
reserve
guilty plea
it in some way?
He did on direct appeal.
Qualified guilty plea?
He pursued all of his post-conviction remedies in the state.
I'm not asking what remedies he pursued. Was this a conditional guilty plea of the sort allowed by Rule 11A in federal courts?
I do not believe it is. There at least is no evidence that it was.
So you've got problems with waiver. Although perhaps the state's inattention to this waives the waiver.
I would also argue that, I think.
The second question I have is what difference any of this makes, given the holdings of Ohio against Johnson and Missouri against Hunter, that as long as there is only one proceeding, there can never, ever be a double jeopardy objection to consecutive sentences. It just doesn't make any difference. If the state passed a law saying every thief shall be punished by 5 years for theft, and then he shall be punished again by a second and consecutive sentence of 5 more years for the same theft, if they pass such a statute, it's actually an example in one of these cases, the Supreme Court said no conceivable constitutional problem because there's only one jeopardy. The Supreme Court understands jeopardy to be a proceeding, a legal proceeding, and not a count of an indictment.
I think that's one definition of jeopardy, although I think...
No, it's the Supreme Court's definition of jeopardy, and what I'm referring to is the actual holdings of Johnson and Hunter.
And I'm not aware
that... I do not see how your position can be reconciled with the holdings of the Supreme Court in the Johnson and Hunter cases.
Well, I don't believe those cases overruled Brown versus Ohio, and Brown versus Ohio stands for the proposition that
They don't overrule it. Brown involved two sequential prosecutions. The lesser-included offense to which the defendant pleads guilty, followed by a separate prosecution. And what the Supreme Court said is, Brown against Ohio is a case of double jeopardy in the literal sense of two prosecutions. This is a case of one prosecution. That's the whole point of those cases.
I would agree. The facts of Brown versus Ohio are different from this case, but the court did state in Brown versus Ohio that one of the ways a person can be put in jeopardy twice is to receive multiple punishments for a greater and lesser included offense, regardless of whether those proceedings occurred at one time or two times.
Are you acquainted with Johnson and Hunter by any chance?
I have not read those cases for this proceeding, Your Honor. But I do rely on Brown versus Ohio, and I think that is controlling, and that's the clearly established federal law that the Wisconsin State Court of Appeals...
But how is this different from... isn't your real argument that there's an error of state law? The state court thought these were two separate offenses, but really one is included in the other. Isn't that your argument?
I don't believe it's an error of state law. I believe the Wisconsin Court of Appeals did not correctly read the statutes, and
how is it any different? Just pursuing Judge Easterbrook's point for a second, how is it any different? Assuming they made a mistake in the interpretation of the law, how different would that be if they had simply sentenced a person to... longer than the statute permitted? That would be an error of state law.
I think that would also be an error of federal constitutional law, the Due Process Clause.
Oh, I don't understand. Not every error in a state criminal proceeding as a federal constitutional error.
No, I think the hypothetical that Your Honor raised would raise a due process concern. I think not every error of state law is a constitutional matter, and that was the Lechner case, for example, that the state cites, that was not a constitutional matter.
But suppose he was prosecuted by burglary for burglary and sentenced for burglary, but actually under state law, the crime he committed was larceny because, you know, wasn't after dark or something like that. That would be a standard error of state law. So he'd get an excessive sentence by state law standards. How is that different from this case?
Again, I think that also might be a federal constitutional claim because it's a due process claim, I think. I think this...
Now you're saying every sentencing error is in a state criminal proceeding is a federal case. That
well, I think if a court exceeds...
Is every sentencing error in a state court prosecution a federal constitutional violation?
No, it is not.
Then what is special about this error?
I think what is special about this error is that it does violate clearly established federal law, as determined by Blockberger and Brown versus Ohio. It's clearly established federal law that the Double Jeopardy Clause does not allow...
But that's Judge Easterbrook's point. There are two proceedings here.
I don't think the fact that there is only one proceeding
matters. What is the logic of your position? That is, why would it make a difference whether a state court made a mistake about the interrelation between two state statutes, or made a mistake about the applicability of a state statute?
I think
aren't they the same?
Well, the importance is that the defendant's double jeopardy rights were violated.
That's circular. That's circular. The question is, why should it make a difference whether he gets a longer sentence because they've misapplied one statute or because they have, you know, intersected two statutes incorrectly?
I think one example is a double jeopardy violation, and perhaps one example is not, and therefore it's not a federal
That's
matter.
Circular again.
I think, you know, sort of bottom line here, the Wisconsin Court of Appeals implicitly, if not explicitly, rejected your understanding of what it means to drive a vehicle. And we're bound by that court's interpretation of state law on that point, aren't we?
I disagree that this court is bound by an interpretation of state law that, as a result, violates federal constitutional law. And I think that's what the Supreme Court was doing in Garner versus Louisiana. I think that's what the Supreme Court was doing in Brown versus Ohio.
We first have to disagree with the state, even on your view, we first have to disagree with the state court to find... to determine that there's a constitutional problem.
That's correct.
If the state court was right, there's no constitutional problem.
That's correct.
And can you point to any Wisconsin cases that would support your interpretation of the term drive?
I only point to the statute and the definition of drive that's contained in the statute. Apparently, this was a matter of first impression in the state courts, whether operating a vehicle without consent is a lesser-included offense of robbery. But I would point to the statute and the definition of drive contained in that statute, which encompasses taking by any means, whether it's towing or hoisting. Unless there are any further questions, I will reserve the rest of my time.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Mullins. Ms. Moeller?
May it please the Court, I'm Marguerite Moeller, Assistant Attorney General, appearing on behalf of the respondent, Jodine Depish. First, in response to some of Judge Easterbrook's questions regarding waiver, I don't have the case off the top of my head, but I do believe that in Wisconsin the rule is different than under Federal Rule 11, that a guilty plea does not necessarily waive all double jeopardy objections. However, even if this were not the rule in Wisconsin, in the state courts on direct appeal, and I was not involved in that proceeding, the state did not raise waiver as a bar. The Wisconsin Court of Appeals did not address it. And in responding to the habeas petition, a colleague of mine did not raise waiver either. So we would probably be barred at this point from making that argument. The state's primary argument in this case is the one that the judges, all of you, touched on during my opponent's argument, and that is really he is asking this court to second-guess the Wisconsin Court of Appeals on the definition of a term, drives, in a state statute.
You can lower the podium, not the microphone, the podium. There's a switch on the right hand. No.
Below.
Oh, sorry.
I think the clerk's office gives out instructions on this.
Sorry about that. He's basically asking this court to second-guess the Wisconsin Court of Appeals on a question of state law, and that is the meaning of the word drives in the statute that prohibits driving and operating a motor vehicle without the owner's consent. And under the cases cited in our brief, this court is not free to second-guess the Wisconsin Court of Appeals on a question of state law. And once you abide by the definition given to the statute by the Wisconsin Court of Appeals, then cases like Brown versus Ohio and Blockberger are distinguishable because these offenses are not, neither offense is a lesser included offense of the other, so there is no reason.
I don't know why anybody is talking about Blockberger here. The Supreme Court of the United States has been as clear as it is possible to be that Blockberger is a rule of statutory construction applicable only within the federal courts. State courts can have their own and potentially different rules for how one defines the relation between statutes. Why should we be talking about the federal rule of construction for overlapping statutes in a case involving state statutes?
I must be mistaken in my analysis because I was always under the impression under Wisconsin's law that in interpreting the Fifth Amendment double jeopardy provision that the Wisconsin courts use Blockberger as the test to determine whether prosecution under more than one.
Wisconsin can use Blockberger for what it wants. We're in federal court. Federal courts use Blockberger as a rule of statutory interpretation, not as a constitutional test. Among other cases, Missouri against Hunter and Johnson and Ohio against Johnson are quite clear about that proposition. Both of them hold that Blockberger has no role to play in double jeopardy claims coming from state courts.
And that is an additional reason why this court should affirm the district court's decision.
Is it?
Yep.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank
Ms.
you.
Mueller. Mr. Mullins, how much time does he have? 2 minutes?
I would just invite this court's attention to Brown versus Ohio, where the court said that whatever the sequence may be of the prosecutions, the Fifth Amendment forbids successive prosecution and cumulative punishment for a greater and lesser included offense. I think the constitutional rule at issue here is whether these offenses are a greater and a lesser included offense. Blockberger is a means of determining whether these offenses are greater or lesser included. We stand by the our position that it is not possible to take property when that property is a vehicle without driving the vehicle as well, based on the definition of drive contained in the Wisconsin statutes.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Mullins. And you were asked to represent this
client
on this court. Well, thank you for your efforts on behalf of your client.